Commissioners of Public Lands meeting to order. Moving down the agenda, we have approving the minutes from our last meeting. I move to approve the minutes.
I second.
Any changes, Josh, on your end?
Nope.
Great, me neither. All those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
Great, the minutes are approved. Moving down to the loans, we just have one loan at $353,000. Looks for some bridge replacement. I move to approve the loan for today.
A second.
Rich, do you anything of note with this Port Wing loan that we're looking at today?
You know, I think the only thing I might mention is that this project will likely receive some grant funding at some point in the future. And so I would expect this loan to be paid down or off a little quicker than the 5-year term.
Do you think, Rich, that's actually a good point. I mean, are they almost using the trust fund loan program as a gap financing tool for this, or?
That's a good way to put it, Sarah. You know, they want to get the project done. A lot of these grant programs require the community to finish the project in whole before they apply for the grant.
Yep. It's funny. I was just in Ashland and we were just talking about that, Rich.
It's interesting you bring that up because of the fact that so many times when and I have been making presentations for places, some of the other presenters talk about state and federal aid that's available, but they speak in a language that oftentimes isn't understood by some of the local folks. And when Rich and I get out there, we always say, it's great that there are grants available, but most of them require a local match or that the local community pay everything and wait for a reimbursement. And most communities say, well, we don't have that kind of money sitting around. And we point out that the fact is you can borrow from us for that local match or for that local payment up front. And we will be the ones, you know, lending you the money and you can pay us back because we have no prepayment penalties. And that's one of the things that those local communities really appreciate about the program.
Yeah, Tom, I think that's it's something that I was actually just talking to Ashlyn about when I was up there last week. And I think we'll see more of an opportunity to potentially use the state trust fund loan program for gap financing, knowing the infrastructure money that's likely going to be distributed, I think, in the same way. So
one other thing I'd like to mention is that we have received a number of applications over the past few weeks. And so, you know, the approval of the loans has been a little lacking in the last few meetings, but it should pick up soon.
Great. Thanks, Rich. Any other questions? All right. See none. I move to approve the loan. We already seconded it.
Second.
Thanks, Josh. All those in favor say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh.
All right. The Port Wing loan is approved. We've got no old business, but we do have a quarterly investment report going under new business. So, Rich, do you want to walk us through how the funds are performing?
Will do. Thanks, Sarah. You know, the board packet today includes the three regularly quarterly reports constructed for the Common School Fund and updated for today's meeting. Now let's move on to the first report, which is included as page 6 of your packet. Going across the page, the portfolio report shows the current market value, cost, unrealized gain, yield, and projected income for the Common School Fund portfolio by asset class. As you can see throughout the middle column, we continue to show gains in every asset class and have total unrealized gains at just over $95 million at the end of Q4. This total does not include the $15.4 million in gains that we realized through trading during the 2021 calendar year, including $3.1 million realized during the fourth quarter. When long-term gains are realized through the sale of securities, these gains are removed from the unrealized gain category and added to the fund principal for reinvestment. The right two columns in this table show the yield and projected income from each of the asset classes. The overall portfolio yield has now risen to 4.0, with the projected annual income increasing about $4 million from the last quarterly report. This increase in projected income comes from an unexpected source: public equities, namely international stock ETFs. While business for many global companies may have improved somewhat from the beginning of 2021, some of the increase in dividends is likely due to a better understanding of these companies of the pandemic risks to both corporate earnings and cash flows. It appears that companies have been prudently withholding dividends to support their operations if needed. But earnings have been stronger than expected, and that level of excess cash reserves may no longer be needed. Companies have now distributed a portion of these funds to shareholders through increased dividends. Looking at our portfolio from the 20,000-foot level, we have made excellent progress over the past year. Compared to board report provided for December 31st of 2020, first, the overall yield on the common school fund portfolio increased from 3.6% to 4.0%. Second, we have increased our projected annual income by about $10 million. And third, this increase in income occurred while also lowering the risk to our beneficiaries by diversifying our assets and sources of distributable income. One thing we need to keep in mind is that our newly projected annual income over $51 million is only a projection and does not have an impact on our distribution this year. But we continue heading in the right direction. Are there any questions before we turn the page? Okay, let's move on to the asset allocation report on page 7, which shows how we are doing in regard to our target allocations. Today, I would like to focus on a different aspect of this report. There are two initiatives we have taken over the past few years that have amplified the importance and difficulty in managing our cash reserves. First, our strategy to increase the expected rate of return to our beneficiaries has included making a larger share of our investments into private funds, including real estate, private debt, and venture capital. The commitment and call practices of these private fund investments leaves the date of any particular investment a little murky. And two, when cash is paying close to zero, it is important that we reduce cash levels by investing in other asset classes to maximize distributions. But now to the point. Towards the bottom of the page, please notice that our unfunded commitments at a total of $172 million now exceed available cash by about $100 million. At first glance, this may appear a little imprudent, but there are several reasons that this imbalance should not cause alarm. First, in addition to the over $70 million in cash reserves shown, we have $800 million in liquid assets that are available to generate additional cash. The vast majority of these liquid assets are publicly traded stocks and bonds and currently valued above our cost. This means that through selling bond and equity ETFs that we already own in our portfolio, we could deliver more than enough cash for reinvestment and generate long-term capital gains for the portfolio in the process. These funds are generally available within 3 business days, and call notices normally provide 10 to 15 days in advance. For example, note that we have 10.8% of our assets currently invested in state and municipal bonds, but the target allocation is at 5%. Corporate bonds are invested to 15.4% with a target of 10%. Just by reducing our bond portfolios to their target allocations, we would increase cash reserves by about $150 million. And at the end of Q4, we had unrealized gains of over $12 million in these bond portfolios. Second, some of our commitments will not be funded for several years. Our recent commitment of $50 million to the Prudential Senior Loan Opportunities Fund has a 4-year investment period that ends on December 31st of 2025. And some of these commitments will never be funded. Blackstone Strategic Partners is expected to only call 1/2 of the commitment before returns begin to reduce the amount of capital invested. For venture capital, the rule of thumb is that funds will begin returning capital after only 60 to 65% of their original commitment has been called. The third reason not to worry about a shortfall is that the Common School Fund receives cash inflows on a regular basis. Over the next months, we expect over $50 million in bond redemptions as large investments in state muni bonds reach their call date. In addition, the payment date for state trust fund loans on March 15th is expected to return close to another $50 million in principal. Fourth and finally, at the beginning of each month, BCPL staff projects cash reserves 12 months into the future. Our most recent cash forecast indicated that cash reserves are expected to actually increase over the remainder of the year based on current commitment levels. This projection includes a forecast of cash inflows, along with a knowledge of the current loan pipeline and when loans are expected to be funded, the date of expected bond redemptions, and a pretty good understanding of when each of the private funds is expected to make capital calls. Should we ever reach a point where the monthly forecast shows cash levels falling below 2% of the portfolio, which is about $28 million today, the investment committee would activate a liquidity strategy approved last year. This strategy involves increasing the frequency of cash forecasts to a weekly basis, tightening our forecasts on both the loan and commitment funding schedule, and pinpointing those securities to be liquidated when and if needed. By discussing these measures taken by the investment committee, I wanted to assure the board that we have an excellent plan in place for the Common School Fund to have enough cash reserves available to fund our commitments when needed. Moving on to the rest of this chart, we're moving closer to our target allocations. As mentioned, we remain over-allocated to our bond portfolios and anticipate making additional commitments to private debt, infrastructure, and venture capital in 2022. These moves will bring us closer yet to our target allocations. Are there any questions before we move on to the progress report on the next page?
Not for me.
Thanks. This page highlights the relative calm that we've experienced within the portfolio over the past 3 months. In the center column, you will note a modest decrease in bonds, while the amount invested in trust fund loans increased by nearly $30 million in the fourth quarter. This increase in total trust fund loans is expected during the fall of each year, as the trust fund loan program does not allow prepayments on any loan between September 1st and December 31st. This moratorium on fall prepayments is meant to reduce confusion, as BCPL is required by statute to certify the debt of each borrower in late September. Any prepayments made after that date would impact borrower tax levy calculations, which are not normally completed by municipalities or school districts until November. Borrowers that would like to make a prepayment during the fall are required to wait until the first business day of the new year. Accordingly, we anticipate an inflow of cash in early January each year. This year, we received a little over $10 million in loan prepayments after January 1st. Other movements within the portfolio reflect the reclassification of the Blackstone Secured Lending Fund that went public in October. This moved about $32 million from private debt to public equities. On a final note, please refer to the bottom right section of this page and see that the Common School Fund continues to grow well in excess of inflation. Comparing fund growth to the rate of inflation is important because the long-term goal of managing the Common School Fund is to grow fund principal and annual distributions at or above the appropriate long-term rate of inflation. That growth is the only way for the Common School Fund to remain relevant for future generations of Wisconsin school children. The media has been all over the fact in the past year, prices have risen at the fastest rate over the last 40 years. Although not shown in this report, the general rate of inflation, called CPIU, which measures the cost of all items for urban consumers, accelerated to 7% over the past year. This spurt is from two factors. The supply of goods has not recovered from the COVID shutdown as quickly as the demand of the same goods, and low unemployment rates are forcing an increase in wages across the board. The argument between economists these days is regarding the persistence of this higher inflation, whether it will continue as a long-term problem. With an increase of 8.9% in the Common School Fund over the past year, we are glad to have eclipsed even the accelerated rate of general inflation. However, when looking at the CPI numbers for this report, we saw an interesting contradiction. Staff had earlier determined that the appropriate rate of inflation to use for the Common School Fund was the Consumer Price Index for educational books and supplies. This index was chosen because the Common School Fund is currently directed to provide the sole state aid for the purchase of public school library media and resources. Sounds appropriate. Looking back 40 years provides some perspective. You'll see in a light yellow box that over the previous 40 years, inflation for educational books and supplies rose at an average annual rate of 5.3%. That is 90% higher than the 40-year rate of inflation for the economy as a whole at 2.8%. That deviation makes a huge impact over time. Let's say you start with $1 million. In 40 years, your nest egg would be worth only $330,000 if inflation averaged 2.8%. However, if the rate of inflation was 5.3%, your $1 million nest egg would be worth a paltry $105,000 in 40 years. That's a great example of why we need to invest the Common School Fund for growth. There's a misconception that Einstein said that interest compounding is one of the most powerful forces in the universe. He didn't actually say that, but this example on the ravages of inflation shows that it may be true. Take a look at the university fund and the Ag College Fund that we manage. Extremely important in 1848 to the UW, but virtually meaningless today because there was no provision for growth in the trust funds. Back to the Common School Fund. While the annual rate of price inflation for educational books and supplies is much higher than overall prices in the long term, that has not been true in recent years. In fact, our chosen measure for Common School Fund inflation has actually been negative over the past few years. This might be due to the impact of technology in the library, or it could be that educational books prices are a lagging indicator and we can expect a jump in prices down the road. We don't understand the underlying reason yet, but we'll be keeping a close eye on this data. In either case, it'll be interesting to see if our chosen measure of inflation continues to decline in the face of price increases elsewhere in the economy. If so, we may need to reevaluate whether or not the CPI for educational books and supplies is the appropriate measure for inflation for the Common School Fund. I would venture to guess that public school librarians are not seeing a decrease in operating costs. To finish up, inflation really does have an impact on investment strategy. During the past few years, meeting our goal of growing fund principal at a rate greater than inflation has been relatively easy. Inflation has been extremely low and markets have performed quite well. Given that return expectations have fallen and inflation expectations are going up, the next several years are bound to be more challenging. Nevertheless, the diversification we have undertaken over the past few years has left us in a very good position. We have made important commitments to asset classes that tend to perform quite well during inflationary periods, namely real estate and floating debt. In closing, I would just like to say that regardless of future market conditions, including inflation, it is my belief that the Common School Fund is well positioned to continue to deliver record distributions to our beneficiaries into the foreseeable future. That's all I have for today, and thanks for your time. Does anybody have any questions?
It's a lot of good information, Rich. Thank you. And what I find interesting is I don't know if in an investment committee meeting, at least of recent, that I remember looking at the rate of inflation. And it's interesting when you see 5.3 versus 2.8.
That's a big difference.
Yeah.
Kind of amazing when you do the long-term math.
Yeah, I was really surprised by this because to your point, you would think that educational books and supplies is the right thing to look at. But when you compare the two, that was an interesting tidbit today, Rich, for sure.
We'll see what happens going forward.
Yeah. The other thing I just want to point out to Josh is, Josh, when you look at page 7 under asset allocation, something that I'm really excited about, and I think Rich has done a good job, is we have reviewed a few Midwest/Wisconsin-based venture funds that I think could be great additions to the portfolio. And I know that's something that we've talked about, too, as we when we updated the investment policy statement of seeing whatever we can do in Wisconsin. So just to highlight, as Rich was talking about the importance of diversification and looking at when we diversify doing things in Wisconsin.
Great, thanks for the update, Rich.
Thank you.
All right, if there's nothing more with the investment reports, and I assume, Rich, that's also your chief investment officer's report, unless there's other, anything else you wanna share?
No, I think that I've said enough today, thank you.
No, it was all good information. I will then turn it over to Tom for his executive secretary's report.
I'd like to give Rich some kudos again for putting things together. And by the way, when putting that CPI stuff together, the first thing that Rich and I did was reach out to some educational groups, including WEMTA, to ask them what's been their experience with inflation and the cost of their materials. But because their costs have changed so drastically over the years, 40 years ago, they bought books and magazines. Today, they buy iPads and computers and software and licenses. And they weren't able to give us any guidance whatsoever on what how their costs have changed. And so Rich deserves some credit in looking for some other published reliable sources that we could use as a guide for what that inflation might be. So anyway, kudos on not just the investment strategy, but finding ways to figure out what our inflation benchmarks might be there. With respect to my report, as I noted at our last meeting, the Common School Fund distribution for this spring is scheduled to be $40.6 million. Which would be another record for an annual distribution. According to the state constitution and state statutes, that amount is then allocated to all the Wisconsin school districts based upon the number of people between the ages of 4 and 20 living in each district, not the number of students enrolled in schools in the district. So we send the total amount to DPI, which then cuts it up and allocates the proper amounts to the 421 different school districts. In non-pandemic years, BCPL has worked closely with Wisconsin Educational Media and Technology Association on a luncheon event during the WEMTA annual conference where we present a big check. And while that event is coming up on March 8th, it's still a bit uncertain as to how that event will be structured with COVID numbers still relatively high. If board members are interested in participating in that event, please let me know, because we've tried to make sure that we can arrange a short speaking spot at the event for them. Next, also, as I noted at our last meeting, the normal school fund is also heading toward a record distribution this year. $1,070,000. The normal school fund distribution is earmarked by statute for four different UW uses, including scholarships and programs. But the largest funded program, merit scholarships, is scheduled to sunset in mid-fiscal 2023. State Treasurer and I have worked on developing legislation that would provide forgivable loans or scholarships for aspiring teachers. UW officials recently gave the State Treasurer and myself a briefing on how the UW has used our distributions over the past decade. It was heartening to hear that our efforts have provided over 1,000 UW students with scholarships during that time. The unfortunate part is that those students had no idea that BCPL provided the funding for their respective scholarships, and we didn't know who received the money. We look forward to working more closely with the UW on these matters in the future. Next, we are continuing our progress on diversifying our revenue streams from our school trust lands as well. For the last 50 years, the only source of revenue has been from timber. However, we have completed a preliminary draft of a request for proposals regarding the sale of carbon credits on certain BCPL lands. We are also continuing to work on developing proposals regarding maple syrup production on certain industrial forest lands. Having three separate streams of revenue will improve the economic performance of the normal school fund while providing BCPL with financial credit for preserving lands that need and warrant protection. And finally, I'm working with the state treasurer on our report regarding our progress and goals and objectives, which we hope to present at the next board meeting. Are there any questions?
None for me. Thanks, Tom.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Tom. We know it has been another busy time for BCPL. And Josh, I just want to, I guess, emphasize a few things from Tom's report. I think one is how hard we've been working on trying to find a solution to the normal school fund, because knowing that the scholarship part is going to sunset, that means that money just sits there. And we're at a time where we know these funds are desperately needed. And so it has been an important effort, I think, as we are working through this legislative session to try to find a solution, and we'll continue to work to do so. But have received some really positive feedback as far as in addition to securing the merit scholarship program and hopefully diversifying it a bit, also adding this teacher loan forgiveness program that we know is also desperately needed across the state. So it has been an effort, and it will continue to be an effort, and we will persist because we know it's we've got the money, and these are important things within statute that we can support. So the other two updates from my end is I did last week visit one of our projects that we financed. So back in October, we financed solar panels in Ashland for their economic development center, and got together with the head of the economic development center and the mayor and local reps to talk about the impact, as well as some of their kind of community financial struggles. And as we talked about earlier today, one of their big challenges has been providing money up front, knowing that they have to pay for these projects, and then they have to wait until after the project is completed to get reimbursed. And that often becomes really hard for them to do so. So that is one of the kind of key takeaways I walked away with, and knowing the work that we can do to, I think, continue to support that with the State Trust Fund Loan Program. And then the final piece is, as Tom said, we are, I think, really excited about this $40.6 million distribution, and making sure that regardless if we're remote or if we're in person, that we will make this a big splash and highlight the good news and the good work that this fund is providing for our schools. And so in addition to WIMTA, we've been working with DPI, and we'll kind of continue to keep the board updated, knowing that this is about a month away. But that is it for my report. Any questions?
No, thanks for that update, Sarah.
Okay. Hey, well, any future agenda items?
Not for me.
Great. See none. I move to adjourn our meeting.
I second.
All those in favor say aye. Aye, Sarah.
Aye, Josh. Have a good week,
everybody. Bye-bye.